Right now, most churches are planning their budgets for 2009. Your church can support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. Find out more about the Issues Etc. 300 on the sponsors page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Download the flyer and present it to your congregation today.
Any of us look back and say interracial marriage should still be illegal on the day after Barack Obama's elected president of the United States?
If Barack Obama's parents were same-sex married, Barack Obama would have never been born.
Wouldn't it be cool if we could get 20,000 people having sex for seven straight days?
What we're saying is we're willing to accept some infanticide as the implication of our support for abortion.
Faith has sustained me through the challenges and the joys of my presidency, and faith will guide me for the rest of my days.
So is it time to surrender? I imagine over the next couple months, or perhaps years, that question will be answered by many, especially as it's spoken to pro-lifers. Come on, you lost the election. Don't you see that? It's time to settle for something less than your goals were laudable. Do make abortion illegal. Yeah, abortion's wrong, but how about making it unthinkable? And then we won't have to worry about making it illegal. You tried, you had some successes, but you lost the election. It's time to give up already. Is it time to surrender now that there has been a staunchly pro-choice president elected, and along with him, Democratic gains in both the Senate and the House? We're going to be talking about the future of the pro-life movement. Scott Klusendorf is our guest for the first half hour of Issues Etc. We're coming to you live this Monday afternoon. It's November the 17th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After a half hour's conversation with Scott Klusendorf, Pastor David Peterson joins us to talk about parenting and pastoral care for children with special needs and their families. And then in the second hour of the program, Dr. Albert Moeller will join us for about 10 minutes, a little post-election analysis, 2 weeks out. Pastor David Shaddy will be our guest in the last part of the program. We'll begin a three-part daily series with him on the gospel and the Christian family today, marriage. You can join us for the next 2 hours. 1-877-623-6943 is our call-in number. 877-623-MY-I-E, and our in-studio email address, talkback@issuesetc.org, talkback@issuesetc.org. Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. Scott, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Todd, good to be back with you.
How big a setback was the election 2 weeks ago for the pro-life movement?
Well, there's no doubt we've experienced a crushing defeat, at least in the current political cycle. If you stop to think about it, Todd, we can't deny that the executive and legislative branches of the federal government are now firmly in the hands of people who are committed, deeply committed, I might add, to the proposition that an entire class of human beings can be set aside to be killed simply because they're in the way of something we want. And I have no doubt that it will be exactly as you said a moment ago, when we will hear voices saying, hey, this debate is over, give it up. Politically, you guys are dead on arrival. You might as well back off and pursue other goals. And let's be honest, they have reason to gloat here. President-elect Obama, with very eager support from a democratically controlled Congress, easily has the votes he needs to pass a Freedom of Choice Act, to fund destructive embryo research, to push through a healthcare proposal that would include, most likely, funding for elective abortion. This is all very bad. But, Todd, I'm going to tell you something. Quitting is not an option. We've got work to do, and I want to make it very clear that in no way is this pro-life advocate going to back off.
How do you explain the gains that were made in the election by pro-choice forces?
Well, I think what happened was twofold. Number one, there's no doubt that this was a very anti-Republican election. That's clear. We have a very unpopular president who, for whatever reasons, and there are many, and I'll leave it to smarter heads than mine on the political front to dissect all of that. But I think it's fair to say that policies were not explained well regarding the war in Iraq. And then once this current economic downturn hit, I think the election at that point was a foregone conclusion. The populace blames the party in power being the one in the White House, not necessarily the one controlling Congress. But secondly, Todd, and this is where I differ from some analysts out there, I believe that there were worldview issues in play here. And for a long time, we've been hearing people say, well, the public is coming around to the pro-life view. I have never once believed that those statistics were entirely accurate. I've been suspicious of them. The fact that the public is willing to ban partial birth abortion is a good thing, but it doesn't follow from that that they're willing to agree with us that all human beings, regardless of their size, their level of development, their location, ought to be protected in law. And I think we saw that here. I think there was public anger as well at the whole Terri Schiavo sequence. And, of course, it's true the public didn't understand that. They were factually misinformed about it. But our side also did a pretty bad job explaining our view. So when it comes down to it, I think there were worldview issues involved, and those worldview currents were not going our way.
If I'm hearing you correctly, it sounds as though perhaps a plurality or the majority of the electorate took the position, well, you know, abortion may be important, but it doesn't really affect me. And so it's not going to be an issue that's going to make or break a candidate for me. How do you respond to someone who says abortion doesn't affect me?
It depends what they mean by that. Some people say it kind of in a critical way of pro-lifers, and by that they mean that we're too single issue and that there are broader issues we ought to deal with. I did a debate recently with Tony Jones, who is one of the leaders of the emergent church movement, and he was arguing that pro-lifers like me are single issue and we need to be broader in our approach. Well, yeah, I understand that. I suppose you could accuse those opposed to slavery of being single issue, those opposed to the expanse of the German Nazi war machine in World War II of being single issue. The real issue here is, of course, there are issues that are dominant. And by saying we acknowledge that there are dominant moral issues, it doesn't mean we forget all others. But clearly, some are more dominant than others. And pro-life Christians have a responsibility to put their weight on the issue that carries the most moral importance. And clearly, abortion, embryonic stem cell research are greater moral issues in terms of their weight than how the gas prices are doing or how the housing market is doing. So in that sense, yeah, we're single issue, but it doesn't mean we've forgotten everything else. It just means we put things in their proper perspective.
Well, okay, the other side of that, I mean, you dealt with the you guys are too narrow in your complement of issues, but someone who says, look, it may affect the woman in the inner city, it may even affect the unborn, but abortion doesn't directly affect me. My wife and I are past childbearing years, or I'm unmarried. These things don't affect me.
Well,
how would you argue that person?
Yeah. Let's define what the word me is. You say that the person, the critic says to you, hey, Todd, abortion doesn't affect most people, only those who are in childbearing age. Well, let's define who's included in the term people. This is primarily a debate about who we are as a people. Will our definition of the human family be inclusive, or is it going to exclude those who don't meet our arbitrary standards we wish to impose on them? That debate about human value impacts all of us, and here's why. If the power to decide if you count as a human being resides with politicians who are free to define you in existence or out of existence, none of our rights are secure. On the other hand, if our society recognizes that each and every human being, regardless of size, development, location, has a natural right to life, meaning they are valuable and have a right to life in virtue of the kind of thing they are, human beings, then all of us are protected and no government can step in and strip us of that. So that debate, whether we are valuable for what we are intrinsically or only valuable for what we can do functionally, impacts all of us whether we want to recognize it or not.
We recently spoke with Hadley Arkus, the author of the Born Alive Infant Protection Act, and he had come to a stunning conclusion on talking to some of his students at Amherst College, where he realized that his among his students, the pro-choice students, were willing to say that partial birth abortion was in fact infanticide. They were willing to concede that, but at the same time, they were willing to accept some infanticide in order to stand in their position in favor of abortion. Do you agree that people are willing to accept something like infanticide if abortion can be kept legal? And what do you make of it about a minute and a half before our break?
Well, I read that same article you referenced by Hadley Arkus, and it was stunning, but the students were finally being forced to be honest. And I think Hadley did a very good job of pushing them to where their argument naturally leads. I know of no argument for elective abortion that wouldn't also justify infanticide in most cases. The idea that we can draw this arbitrary line at birth and say before birth you have no rights and then a minute later you do is just nonsensical. And when you push hardcore abortion advocates to the logical conclusion of their argument, they have no choice but to admit that. And that's why you see people like Peter Singer, Marianne Warren, Michael Tooley, and David Boonin arguing, look, you're right. There really isn't a clear-cut argument we can give against infanticide. We simply have to accept it as one of the dirty little things that goes along with our argument. But on whole, our argument is still good, mind you. That's the way they tend to explain it.
Okay, when we come back, I got one more question about that. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. He's president of Life Training Institute. We're coming to you live this Monday, November the 17th, talking about the future of the pro-life movement. Some people say the future is coming to a very abrupt close. Maybe we need to start talking about just limiting the number of abortions. Eliminating abortion, it's simply unrealistic. Stay tuned.
Did they tear it out with talons of steel and give you a shot so that you wouldn't feel and washed it away as if it wasn't real?
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Gary Fulton, Andreas Johansson, Marsha Fulton, Kazia James, Pastor David Rates, Felicia Shirk, Bruce Lesseman, Calvin Vanderlinde, Cora Ludwig, and Stephen Wolf. Thanks for your support.
What is it, Captain?
Whatever it is, it's incredibly advanced.
Hey iPhone users, you can now listen to Issues Etc. live on your iPhone. Find out by going to piratechristianradio.com and click the iPhone link on the homepage. You no longer have to sit by your PC, laptop, or home radio to listen to Issues Etc. live. piratechristianradio.com and look for the iPhone icon.
With something much, much more. And it's going to change everything.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener supported. We rely upon you to pay for the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. That's Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Scott Klusendorf is our guest. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943, or email us talkback@issuesetc.org. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll talk to the niece of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. about abortion as a civil rights issue, Dr. Alveda King, tomorrow on Issues Etc. We're talking about the future of the pro-life movement with Scott Klusendorf. Scott, picking up on something you said in your last response, you said that there were very few arguments in favor of abortion that you don't think would work just as well as arguments in favor of what most people would recognize as infanticide. Give us an example.
Well, for example, the typical abortion choice argument is that the unborn are not yet self-aware, they don't see themselves existing over time, therefore we may kill them. Well, newborns are not self-aware. They don't see themselves existing over time. And honest abortion choice advocates like Peter Singer, like Michael Tooley and Marianne Warren acknowledge this. So there's a prime example. Other people say, well, look, it's simply not the case that the unborn are aware of their environment. That's true. They aren't. Newborns aren't again. So you take any one of these things, really, and you could find someone outside the womb that would be impacted. Other people would say, well, the unborn don't yet have developed arms and legs. Agreed. But neither do people who are born with developmental disabilities, who might end up crippled, who are in wheelchairs. So you can see how these standards we arbitrarily apply don't just stop with the class of humans we hope to victimize. They can be applied outside of the womb as well.
Okay. The argument has already been made by President-elect Barack Obama. He seems to have picked up on it rather deftly, that what we really ought to be working toward as a society and as government is fewer abortions, less opportunity, less need for abortion. And he seems to say this would substitute very well for the other goals that the pro-life movement has set for itself. Do you think it's true?
Well, there's no doubt he's been successful selling it, but no, I don't buy his argument at all. I mean, the moral logic in play here is just baffling to me for a lot of reasons. First, if abortion does not unjustly kill an innocent human being, I'm curious why Obama is worried about reducing it. But, Todd, if it does unjustly kill a human being, isn't that a good reason to legislate against it? The second thing I would say is laws which allow, and in this case, indeed promote the killing of unborn human beings, are unjust even if no one has abortions. Think of it this way, Todd. Imagine if there was someone running for president who said he was personally opposed to spousal abuse, but he had a voting record 100% in favor of men having a right to beat their wives. And suppose he further told the public that the underlying cause of spousal abuse was psychological, and so instead of making it illegal for husbands to beat their wives, the solution is to provide federally funded counseling for angry men. I think it's no stretch to say, Todd, the voting public would see right through this smokescreen, even if this guy supported publicly funded programs aimed at helping men get better in control of their emotions.
All right. You mentioned before the Freedom of Choice Act. Tell us exactly what it is, and do you think that President Barack Obama, once inaugurated, will be able to make this stick?
Well, he can certainly pass it, and he can do it immediately. He's got the votes, more than enough votes, in both the Senate and House to get it through. And barring some incredible lobbying and commitment from pro-life forces, it's going to be hard to resist that bill becoming law. I'm still hopeful we might be able to do it, but it's going to be tough. Just in case any of your listeners are unaware of what this is, the Freedom of Choice Act in its current form will strip away all current state abortion control regulation that has placed limits on abortion. Now, obviously, we can't outlaw abortion because Roe v. Wade and Doe v. Bolton at the federal court level deny us that option. But states have been able to pass minimal abortion control legislation like refusing to fund abortions with state money, requiring that parents be notified before a minor child's abortion, making sure women are informed about what the procedure involves, that kind of thing. these laws have saved lives. We have evidence that states that have passed these laws have seen their abortion rates drop, in some cases quite a bit, in other cases at least modestly so. So we have reason to believe these laws can save lives. They will all be swept away by the Freedom of Choice Act, as well the federal ban on partial birth abortion, as well federal restrictions through the Hyde Amendment, which prohibit your federal tax dollars from being used to fund abortion. So this is bad stuff.
And what would that mean? I mean, if President-elect Obama served only 4 years but managed only to sign FOCA, what would that mean for the future? Would we start over from scratch?
Well, we would certainly have our work cut out for us in ways that we don't at the moment. Up till this point, pro-lifers have held out hope that the federal courts would reverse the findings of Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton, which the judicial branch of the government mandated abortion on demand through all 9 months of pregnancy. And our hope was that although there were not the votes to declare the unborn human and therefore protected in law, there might very soon be the votes to say, okay, we're going to kick this back to the legislative branch of the government and let them deal with it. Well, if the courts ever did that with the Freedom of Choice Act in place, abortion rights would remain enshrined in law through all 9 months because now at the congressional level, we see abortion rights enshrined into law in a way that even Roe v. Wade didn't do.
So how can the Freedom of Choice Act usurp states' rights when it comes to regulating abortion?
Well, it can because it's a federal piece of legislation, and federal law supersedes state law, especially in our republic as it's become today. The power and the expanse of the federal government is enormous, and states would have to literally look the government in the eye and say, we defy you, and I don't see that happening.
I want your thoughts on pro-life defeats of ballot initiatives in South Dakota, Colorado, California.
Well, the one in California was the most sensible one and the one that had the most probability of actually working, and that was a parental consent ballot initiative. It's failed two previous times there, but in each of those prior two cases, there was a lot of misinformation and distortion that made it difficult for voters to know what they were looking at. It failed again this time, though it did a little better than the previous attempt. But the ballot initiatives in South Dakota and Colorado, in my view, were wrongheaded. And the reason is, Todd, even if they would have passed, we did not and do not have the votes at the federal court level to sustain them. Within 5 minutes of these things being law, you would see the federal courts moving to enjoin them, meaning declare them unconstitutional in light of Roe versus Wade and Doe versus Bolton and other federal court cases that have ruled in favor of abortion as a constitutional right. What all that means is we need to learn to count before we pass legislation or propose legislation that's just going to be thrown out. It may make us feel good to pass these laws, but how does it help our cause when they're thrown out and we end up with yet another layer of judicial law against us? And not only that, guess who gets to pay all the attorney fees to the pro-abortion attorneys that are going to get rich off this case? Pro-lifers do. So instead of passing legislation that has a shot at saving lives, we go for something that has no hope of standing up in the federal court system until we get more judges on the court. Just take the Supreme Court, for example. We are at least right now, at a minimum, one justice shy of having anything like what was passed in South Dakota or Colorado upheld. And I'm not even sure we're that close, but at a minimum, we're that. So why are we doing this when we know it has no hope, even if it is approved by the voters? Again, it might make us feel good, but I fail to see what the positive end result is.
Well, speaking of the Supreme Court, and finally, if soon-to-be President Barack Obama serves only one term, how do you see the makeup of the court changing by 2012?
Oh, boy. Well, there's a couple of justices that are very, very ill and or old, Stevens being one, and I think Ginsburg has indicated she would like to be off the court. I know she's battled cancer, and other illnesses, so you could see some replacements right away. On the conservative side, there's been rumors that Scalia is bored with the court. I hope those rumors are false. We wouldn't want to lose any conservative justices, but I think there'll be a couple of liberal ones retire right away, and he will. Obama, of course, will have the option of putting younger justices on the court that could serve for a very long time. If there's any conservative retirements, then it even gets worse for our side.
Scott Klusendorf is president of Life Training Institute. We have a link posted to Scott Klusendorf and Life Training Institute at issuesetc.org. That's our website, issuesetc.org. Click on demand. Scott, thank you so much for being our guest.
Todd, always good to be with you. And remember, we're not surrendering. We're going to keep fighting this thing.
Thank you, and keep up the good work. When we come back, Pastor David Peterson is going to join us. We're going to talk about parenting and pastoral care for children with special needs and their families. There are a lot of ways of looking at this. People say maybe it's just darkest before the dawn. Maybe what we're looking at is a chance for the pro-lifers and those who maybe sit on the fence for the next 4 years to see what it's like to live in a truly pro-choice country. I don't know. All I know is we got to keep working, got to keep fighting for the unborn, seeking to protect them in every way we can. We'll be right back. I know your brothers and your sister and your mother too. Man, I wish you could see them too.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Mount Zion Lutheran Church, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Sponsors. The Issues Etc. 300.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
Yes, America took a big step forward by electing the first African-American president, but we took a big step backward in electing the most pro-abortion president in the history of our nation. Barack Obama has also pledged to only appoint pro-abortion justices to the Supreme Court. This political loss is certainly a tragedy, but we have only lost a battle, not the war, and we will not give up or relent in our efforts to protect unborn babies and their parents from abortion. By God's mercy and His support, the pro-life movement endured the dark years of the Clinton administration. We will also outlast the Obama administration. We must pledge to pray, work harder, and give more of our resources than ever before in the cause for life until we win. And we will win.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.